when first ordained, I was your archetypal passive-aggressive conflict avoider. I entered parish ministry hoping that we could all just be nice to one another and get along as Christians should. It was possible to shelter in this unreality bubble as a curate because difficult decisions didn't end up on my desk and my training vicar had to do all the heavy lifting when it came to parish squabbles and recurring dilemmas. The first wake-up call came not long afterwards in my first incumbency in a rural parish in Mid-Canterbury. The first row was with the Southbridge Church Grounds Committee over the culling of certain trees. The second was with the Leeston congregation over a proposed major interior redecoration of that church. The first contest of wills ended up as an honourable draw. In the second, I was outmanoeuvred and defeated, hands down. From then on, I was on a steep learning curve. In the British Army, the final stage of infantry training is a battle school in which they simulate in a highly realistic way what it's like to be at the forward edge of the battle area over a prolonged period of time. The church equivalent for that kind of finishing school came my way in a 10-year ministry in central Wellington. The parish had torn itself apart in the Civil War just before I arrived, decimating congregation numbers. Hard calls, difficult decisions and troublesome people came thick and fast. Ministering in that parish was like swimming in piranha-infested waters. In order to survive in that contested environment, I used to get a massage, a legitimate one, on my day off in order to get the tension out of my body. I might add that turbulence has come my way in my personal life in past years in such a way as to toughen me up to a considerable extent. Just how far I'd come from my Casper milquetoast beginnings came home to me in a preaching seminar I participated in some years ago when a prominent Auckland clergyman said of his current parish, "There were power struggles in my early years there, but it's been pretty calm recently and I'm becoming bored. I enjoy conflict." I noted the internal echo inside me with surprise and interest. Here, let me reassure you that I do not take a gladiatorial approach to parish leadership, and I hope and think that parishioners who have worked with me on vestry or as wardens here have experienced me as a calm, kind and reasonable priest. But I am clear that I wouldn't have survived in parish ministry if I hadn't developed an internal resilience when it comes to coping with the inevitable whitewater situations that develop in parish life. And I'm sometimes distressed when I see parishioners getting themselves into difficulties because they can't stand up for themselves in situations where people take advantage of them or treat them in an unjust manner. Jesus has mandated us to be kind, compassionate and forgiving people, but he doesn't expect us to be doormats or the passive victims of selfish exploiters. I'll be coming back to that in a few minutes' time. What has aroused my interest in this issue of Christian living is that verse in 2 Timothy chapter 1 we heard this morning. God's gift was not a spirit of timidity, but the spirit of power and love and self-control. Actually, I prefer the translation of some of the commentaries I've read on this passage. God did not give us a spirit of cowardice, but a spirit of dynamic strength and of charity and discretion. Paul is writing to a beloved younger protege who he has recently ordained. He's aware of the trials that are certain to come Timothy's way as he takes up the joyful yoke of gospel leadership on his shoulders. Paul's in prison now, so he can't personally stand by and support Timothy in what lies ahead. The take-home message for Timothy is to summon up his internal resources of intestinal fortitude for the long haul of ministry, and to cap this off with the infused presence of the Holy Spirit, that's a spirit of fortitude and of endurance and of dynamic strength and of courage. The great 20th century theologian Paul Tillich wrote a book called The Courage to Be, in which he argued that courage is the best of the Christian virtues. Making our way through the stream of life requires us to keep our head held high and our dander up. When St. Paul contrasts dynamic strength with timidity or cowardice, he's using an image of military courage, as in the strength to lead soldiers into battle. I've often pondered on why some people find it hard to stand up, stand their ground, to mark out their boundaries around themselves and to say a firm no to their oppressors. I think it's often tied up with experiences they had in their family of origin, perhaps of tyrannical, terrorizing parents or of overbearing, bullying siblings. Shaking off that kind of early conditioning can be hard to do because it sets the script for our automatic response to certain situations. In my family, our mother tried hard to make our home an oasis of peace and calm, but occasionally she became very angry at my father, whose hapless response was to flap his hands in vain attempts to appease her. It was not a helpful role modelling of how to deal with a woman in full cry. Our secular society often tries to help people who have trouble standing up for themselves with assertiveness training courses. The trainees are set tests of nerve, like entering a cafe or a restaurant, asking for a glass of water, drinking it down, and then leaving without offering to pay for it. The problem is that sometimes graduates of the program return to their lives with a militant tendency to take everybody on as argument generators and verbal overpowerers. Then friends and family start to give them a wide berth. That is why I like the way Paul qualifies his Christian call to arms with the writers about the need for love and self-control. He assumes that when we become masters of ourselves and of our situations, this will also involve becoming people of moderation, tact, discretion, prudence, and good judgment. The road to healthy self-assertion passes through the house of a growing emotional and relational intelligence, what our society now calls soft skills. Speaking from personal experience, I have no illusions about how difficult it can be to become brave and bold in the face of adversity and injustice. It took years for me to become the mouse that roared. Know thyself is a place to start. We need to learn to understand our internal emotional geography, what makes us tick, what our arousal points are, and what disables us as the adrenaline starts to flow. Some kind of self-awareness about who and what we are and how we got to be like this is invaluable as we set out to become in command of ourselves. Self-acceptance is perhaps the next step. Yes, this is who I am and what I am, and I accept that, knowing now my strengths and weaknesses. I accept what the past has done to me without allowing myself to be defined by it, and I now know what I need to do to recover myself when my feelings get out of control and I feel as though I should go and hide under a rock. But beyond all this life coach stuff, there's a theological point to be made, one which 2 Timothy 1 lays out for us. It's a pity that the designers of the 3-year cycle of readings chopped out some of the in-between verses in this morning's selection from that excellent epistle. The key missing verse is, "For he, Christ, has broken the power of death and brought life and immortality to light through the gospel." What underlies much of our anxieties and the disabling factors that promote our timidity is the ultimate fear of our non-being, our death, the big D. I like the way Jerome Quinn and William Wacker address this point. "The inevitable, destructive power of death is the horizon of human existence, a horizon that Jesus crossed and recrossed. All we know of what is beyond that horizon comes through him. Indeed, the horizon itself, death, loses its absolute character, becomes relativized and ultimately inoperative because of Jesus' passage through the worst death men could fashion into indestructible life." St. Paul summed up all that I've been trying to say in this sermon in a succinct sentence at the end of one of his letters. I often use his words as part of the blessing at the end of our services. And I'm going to leave the last word to him. "Let hope keep you joyful. In trouble, stand firm. Persist in prayer."